the sound. And then I have a backup recorder over here.
Yes.
And here we go. So thank you. It's really great to be together. It's where I am in New York, Tuesday, May 12th. And I'm speaking with Dr. Ananda Bhavani, who is coming to us from India today for this interview for the book that Singing Dragon Press will be publishing in 2021, God willing, of the yes. stories of yoga radicals, inspiring stories of pioneers in the field. And so as we center together, Ananda, first deep gratitude for your presence and loving that you share that you're coming from family music practice. That gives me just such joy. And just to remind, this basic five-pointed star of the prototyping model from presencing, that as we center and crystallize in these bodies, this intention and vision that's beginning to go out into the world, this field of possibility aligned at the core, and that as we continue to listen to the universe through the many practices from many traditions now, that these linking of the intelligences, the mind and the heart, and then this will, this action place, that others begin to gather, and that the core team, and then places and spaces begin to emerge for this embodied wisdom to expand and have a life and to respond to the life. And that we learn by doing, that this enactment, that this trusting, this being with as it emerges in us, that there's this spontaneous, consistent crystallizing with clarity and conviction of something emerging, this emerging future. And so I land in my body this morning with a phrase from my global call earlier, which is that somehow we're learning to catch the future and let it land in the moment. And so as we sit here now, opening to this capacity for the sake of the field of yoga therapy and beyond, I invite in all the guides and angels and devas to help, so that as we land here together on the big planet Earth, that as you embody your story and share it out and bring all that has informed you into form for the sake of our future, adding now any words, music, chant that you feel would be helpful for us in this moment.
I would like to acknowledge the great traditions, the wonderful living traditions of yoga from the time of the great rishis, those seers who could perceive reality as it is without any distortion, and who in their infinite compassion have given us those teachings that are timeless and as applicable today as they have ever been. Acknowledging these great masters, I make a chant that we use to start any of our sessions. Tadparam dharyaya vidmahi jnanalingeshwaraya dhimahi tanno guru prachodayate om yoga mashrakta swami gitananda giri guru maharaj ki jai. Enabling these great masters to be with us, guide us, and that we become a conduit for their teachings to be shared without any coloring, without any distortion, without any mutations and deviations. That is our prayer.
Thank you. Thank you. How beautiful. So let's get started. And I would like to keep the space very open here, Ananda, so yes. that the stories that are living in you and the traditions that you have been born into may wish to come forward very differently than the way the questions emerge. Okay, so I'm going to stay very open here. The only request is that we remember the future in this yes. time, and that the purity of our conversation is truly like that arrow of intention piercing through this time of great illusion, and that our nervous systems really are ready for something new. And let us help by being prepared. So initiation invocation, we move to that, and then co-initiation, and then to crystallizing, and then what was your personal experience of your heart and mind, your chitta, your prana chitta, and then how is it actually emerging into the new in this time? That's the shape of our journey. So please start from the beginning as you can, and to find that root and let it sing.
I consider to be born human one of the greatest blessings we can have. Because to be born human is the culmination of many lifetimes of experiences and the samskara and vasana of all those experiences, along with the karma that has been created, has brought us into the present form where we incarnated on this planet to work out the karma that has been accumulated. So to be born human is a great blessing. And with the blessing comes a responsibility, and that responsibility is to live as a human being. Because to be born human, we are given what would be called a manushya dharma. It is a human responsibility, which is to manifest our humanity and grow into our divinity. Mm-hmm. And to be born is a blessing. The second thing is to be born into a family where yoga is mm-hmm. the very breath of life. I think that is a second blessing. Mm-hmm. So one blessing is to be born human. Another is the family into which we are born. And my family into which I was born, consisting of my father and mother, Swami Geetananda Giri, and Ammaji Meenakshi Devi Bhavanani, both of them illustrious yogis mm-hmm. in the truest sense of that word. Both of them living a life of yoga in thought, word, and deed, and both of them on the path of evolutionary conscious evolution towards the highest state of manifestation. So both of them being on that, when they came together in 1967, my father had started the ashram in Pondicherry, Anand Ashram. My mother came all the way from Midwest, USA to study with him as a 25-year-old young American girl looking for answers to the questions of life. Mm. Married the Swami, took him back. You can imagine when she took her husband, the Swami, back to Midwest America in those days. And out of this union, a beautiful union that came together for me of Purusha and Prakriti, Shiva and Shakti, I was conceived in yoga. Hmm. So for me, that is one of the greatest blessings, that I was conceived in yoga. Mm-hmm. And my mother practicing yoga throughout the pregnancy gave me a 9-month head start even before I took my first breath of life. So when people ask me, Dr. Ananda, how long have you been in yoga? I say I have to give my age plus 9 months. Because it is not from my first breath of life. It was from the moment of conception. I have been in that opportunity to live yoga as something that is every moment mindfulness, every moment presence, every moment transformation, and every moment conscious choice. That is how I was conceived. That is how I was nourished for the 9 months. And when I was born, in the delivery room, the labor room, my mother was crawling around on the floor. And the nuns of the St. Joseph of Cluny Hospital were a bit scared whether she had already gone into some sort of perinatal psychosis. And because suddenly you have this white woman crawling around the floor instead of lying back with her legs up in the most unnatural manner for a woman to ever give birth to a baby. And she was actually doing it naturally because of the yoga. She was using her breath awareness to enable me to come out into this world with mindfulness, awareness, and joy. And the moment my father got me in his hands, took me out, showed me the noonday sun. I was born at noon on a Sunday. Sunday, noon. And he shows me to the light and he says, Ananda, this is where you are now. Given the name Ananda, which means joyful bliss. And whenever, as a kid, I used to be a bit morose, a bit down, a bit dejected, a bit angry, a bit sad, my father used to remind me. He said, Ananda, when you do not manifest the joyful bliss in you and do not enable others to manifest it through you, you are not living up to the name you have been given. And you have a responsibility to live up to that name of Ananda. That is the message. So to be blessed to be born human, blessed to be born into a family of conscious yogis. For me, a yogi is a noble human being. That is how I define a yogi. We went through Homo erectus, Homo sapiens sapien. The next stage is Homo nobilis, the noble human being. And that noble human being is what a yogi is. And to be given a name which manifests the highest state of bliss, which is our Anandamaya Kosha. And to say that here, in your physical life, manifest it. Then the environment, being born and brought up in an ashram, a traditional Indian ashram, where yoga from the morning 4 a.m. Brahma Muhurta meditative sitting till the late night mantra chanting and the satsanga and ending with the aarti became part and parcel of my everyday living. Mm-hmm. And exposed to yoga, the Indian classical music, the Indian classical dance, the Indian percussion, doing the ritualistic pujas, learning Sanskrit mantra chanting, and the best part of childhood, playing with a lot of animals.
Mm.
In our ashram, we had a mini zoo. We had dozens of monkeys, dozens of deers. I had a pet mongoose at one time. I have had pet ducks who thought I was their mother. I've seen monkeys born. I have seen monkeys die. I have seen deer born. I have seen deer die. Way before I became a doctor and saw that happen in human beings. So I grew up like a mini Tarzan in that way, or Mowgli.
Yes, yes and yes. So this Mowgli part of your identity, right? Even yes. Midst of the immersion of a long lineage and the beautiful yes. Birth story.
Yes.
There's quality in these practices for social renewal that they invite a question of when did you become a me in the midst of that we. It's almost like you were born into the we space first. Yes. And so I'm curious about how you became your own person in the midst of all of this.
Very true. Very true. Because, you know, when you are born unto this, the we is your natural state. And so, you know, for me in the ashram, I don't think there was much of me. The me moment, I think, would have been when I was homeschooled. And at the age of 13, I went to my first official school. And so I traveled. It was about 10 hours away, about 300 miles away. And in a boarding school in the hills, a beautiful school, 35 acres of campus. I was on my own. I had to learn to take responsibility for what I was going to do that day, whether I would, you know, get up and study or not, get my clothes ironed, have a bath, make sure you brush your teeth. You know, everything starts to become a bit more of you. So I think that me point only started to come after about that age of 13, where I sort of was identified by me, because up to that point, I was part of the ashram, and it was more of being Swamiji's and Ammaji's son rather than Ananda. So I think it was the school that gave me this other perspective that then continued when I went into medical school, where again I went away from home. And so I was recognized for what I did, what I said, and who I was, rather than you are so-and-so's son or blah, blah, blah. So I think this concept of me as an entity, which also then the danger of that is then you start to have this ego, which then starts to think that, you know, you are very special. But then when you are in boarding school, your friends make sure you know you are nothing special. And that is why I think I would never have got that experience in a regular school that I got by being there. So, you know, you got a bit of a balance there. The drum was beaten on both sides.
Perfect. So I'm hearing a beautiful esoteric concept come through now around contraction and expansion that we know about in the breath practices, but I'm hearing you actually invite a more embodied awareness of that coming and goingness of yes. these precepts from the ancients. And I'm curious, as you discovered this relationship of not being separate and then being in a different context, still not being separate, but having to adapt. Tell me what you relied upon to continuously be connected to that ancient thread that you represent today.
Yes. Actually, you know, I've had a very unique upbringing, because being sort of a white kid in a non-white environment, it is actually a very interesting phenomenon. And though I speak Tamil fluently, which the moment I open my mouth, I am one of the group. But if I don't open my mouth, I'm the outsider. So in school and in medical school, both in school as well as when I went to medical school, we call it medical college in India. There was this situation where I was always that white kid. And what that initially, it used to irritate me, because, you know, my friends could go and they could get an extra sweet at dinner time. You were given one sweet each. They could get an extra sweet, which I couldn't get because the guy giving it knew it was me who had already got it. Okay. So this used to hurt a bit at that age. But then this became a teaching for me, that it became my Yama Niyama. And the foundation of yoga is Yama Niyama. Yama is the restraints we put on the subhuman, and the Niyama are the encouraging factors on the human and humane aspects. So what I realized, by being white in a non-white environment, I couldn't do anything wrong because I would be caught. So it became my natural Yama that prevented me from doing something which was not my nature. And at the same time, I realized whenever I did anything good, it would shine brighter because I stood out. And so my teachers, even today, every one of them knows me by name. Every person who worked in my school, the cleaning staff, the security guards, the ladies in the hostels, everybody would remember me and remember the positive impression I left, and that became my niyama. So what I realized, life had given me an opportunity to both manifest the yama and the niyama. The do nots and the do's became part and parcel of every day of my life. I think this was a very great teaching for me. And I tell people, whenever you think you stand out in a crowd, thank God for that. Thank the divine for it. Thank the universe for it. Because it is an opportunity for yama and niyama to become your second nature.
Right. Thank you. So this quality of listening, which is one of the basic practices in the Presencing Institute, relates to what I'm hearing you refer to now. This capacity, just like your mother who wanted to give birth while in practice, this embeddedness in the universal, that when you had a chance to observe potential as a kid in school, the one who everybody knew was different. Please talk to our readers who may be in similar situations in their life, but don't have that capacity to do that magic move of turning the reflection toward their own inner capacity. What did you rely upon as well?
I think a very important aspect here is that we must develop the capacity of self-reflection. There is no other way out of it, because answers cannot come from outside. The answers to our questions, and our questions are unique to us. Each one of us is a unique embodiment of the universe. Every drop of that ocean is different. Every one of us is different. Yet, the common energy runs through each and every one of us. So, being different enables us to understand my questions are going to be different. The answers I get are going to be different, which is why we cannot live somebody else's life. That is the message I give the young children. And I work with thousands of young children. I think at least 30,000 young children over the last 26, 27 years. And the message I give the young children, which is my passion, is you are the master of your destiny, nobody else. And you are you. So your responsibility is to be the best you that you can be within your given circumstances, with your limitations and strengths. So what is very important is not to rely on somebody else's answer, but to develop the capacity of self-reflection. And the way that can come into practice is breath awareness. The breath is the key to coming into the present moment. There's no other way we can do it, to my knowledge. The breath, the moment you focus on your breath, you are in the now. There's no past tense. There's no future tense. You are in the present moment, the moment you focus on your breath. It doesn't matter what technique you use. That technique is secondary. People say, what technique? I say, that is secondary. You can pick techniques off the net, dime a dozen. What is the core principle? Focus on the breath. Because the breath is life. And where the mind goes, the energy flows. And the control of the mind is through the breath. So the mind influences the breath influences the mind. And if you want to know yourself and find answers, you have to start focusing on your breath, not somebody else's breath.
Yes, yes, thank you. So I'm in a space of great wonderment, as many people on the planet are now, in May of 2020, coming out of this COVID time, perhaps. And I'd like to invite, really as a follow-along from your question, particularly using a yogic awareness of Yes, of course, we can employ the breath practices for a greater sense of awareness in the now, in our own bodies. But as we all know that we are being given an opportunity now to embed our awareness in this ecosystem that has been activated so magnificently by COVID, Corona, how can we better manage, deal with, invite, welcome uncertainty as it lands in our bodies, Ananda? Please invite some of these more expansive grounding practices for us. You had a life of, but now everyone is experiencing something a little bit similar, it feels like.
Absolutely. See, my perspective on COVID-19 is that it is a catalyst of transformation. That it is not to be understood as an enemy. It is to be understood as a catalyst of transformation because it is making all of us introspect. Every human being on this planet has been forced to introspect. And in many ways, COVID-19 has been the best yoga teacher. It has made people sit still, not go out, and to focus a bit more inward. That is what a yoga teacher should do. Get people to be still and go in. And it has done it. So how I perceive the present moment is, it is an opportunity for transformation to occur. What is that transformation? My father used to say, a breakdown is an opportunity for a breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And we have a breakdown of everything we considered normal has broken down. For all of us, every part of the world, what we consider normal has broken down. Now the question is, do we say everything's broken down, everything's broken down, everything broken down and break down further? Or do we say, well, it has broken down. What are the pieces I want to take out of my life and build the new that is going to manifest? What is going to manifest will be a choice of what I am going to take from the past, bring into the present, and create a better future. And the most important message that I have got at this time is to have gratitude to this planet, to have respect for life, not just human life, all forms of life. That we are being pushed into a situation where we must realize we are not the owners of this planet, but we are the caretakers. Mm-hmm. We have been given the responsibility to take care of this planet. We have messed it up big. And now we have been given a chance by the benevolent Mother Universe, by Mother Nature, by this Mother Planet, saying, here, you kids, you made a bit of mistake, opportunity for you to set it right. I think this is very important. And for the past 41 days, I have been leading a global prayer where twice a day, we have been doing a 15-minute sequence focusing on the Brahmari, which is the bee breath with the humming sound. We do 27 rounds of that. At the end of it, we make a sankalpa, an aspirational statement that with our collective power of peace, we overcome COVID-19 and creating a sense of focus. And I have thousands of people joining me in this, and it has been amazing. 41 days. Today was 41st day, morning and evening. And then we have a round of gratitude and admiration and support to everyone who is doing the best for humanity at this point of time. We are cheering them on. This is based on Patanjali's teaching, Mudita Punya, which means cheer on those who are trying to be good. So everyone who's doing their part, either in the front line, the sideline, the back line, the stay at home, whatever it be, cheering them on and saying, yes, you're doing good. We are with you. We offer gratitude, respect, and admiration. And then ending with a Shanti mantra of a peace. And this I'm going to be doing for another 7 days, for 48 days, which means 96 times we would have done it. And a 48 is a complete cycle in Indian tradition, which includes 12 zodiac, 9 celestial influences, which we call the Navagraha, and 27 stars that are in the Indian system. So 12 plus 9 plus 27 is 48. And this is what we are working on. And it is amazing. I'll tell you how much it has helped me and how much it has helped people all over the world.
Thank you. I just want to pause to let that capacity building that you're engaged in through a generative practice land. As we learn, Ananda, from people who carry traditions and who follow the structures of the traditions into our time now, we're calling these renewal practices as we restore this faith in what had become invisible. And so as the landing pad, these many practices provide for us in our personal bodies, right? The nervous system responses. And I'm going to lift this into a biophysiological question. With these qualities of integration that come into the nervous system as a result of personal practice, Ananda.
Yes.
I'm having a curiosity about the capacity for the social engagement of Stephen Porges' theory to move into our collective. And nobody's really talking about this yet, but I just experienced that while listening to you because I saw it in my mind's eye and I felt it in my spine. So could we just take a moment to further activate this capacity together right here now, so that for the sake of the future, with these ancient qualities coming through, that we can land in language for the sake of the future, creating something, co-evolving something, as we make space for the new. Down to the fingertips and toes, the music of the spheres are singing now as the new begins to come back over and over again. I see the breeze behind you. It's so beautiful. Let it come through a little bit more clearly for our readers now, please.
This is a moment where we realize that each one of us is part of the whole. And the whole is not complete without us. This means that we owe it to ourselves, we owe it to humanity, we owe it to the world, the universe, to become the best version of us that we can be at this present moment. That can be physically, mentally, emotionally, socially, spiritually. All dimensions must be brought into abundance. And what I'm finding is through these practices, especially practices like Brahmari, I have found it to be such an empowering practice because the trillions of cells in you are all vibrating at the same frequency. Is this grand symphony orchestra of you, not somebody else. And when that happens, a beautiful feeling of harmony, a beautiful feeling of calmness, a beautiful feeling of peace, integrativeness, cohesiveness, wholesomeness, leading to a beautiful sense of bliss manifests from within the heart. When we look at it biophysiologically, the humming sound is a reassuring sound. It is a sound of satiety. If someone says, did you have good food today? How was the meal? Did you enjoy the drama? Is a sound of satiety. And that is why one of the key elements as a human being is contentment, satiety, and serenity. Mm-hmm. And Patanjali's teachings come back to me straight when he says, through santosha, which is contentment, you attain unparalleled sense of ease.
Mm-hmm.
And what is ease?
Mm-hmm.
Health.
Mm-hmm.
Ease is health. Health is ease.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the concept of us being at ease with ourselves,
mm-hmm.
enabling us to be at ease with others. If we are not at ease with ourselves, we will never be at ease with anybody else or any place else. There is a beautiful story and tradition. It must have been an ashram like ours. And the students went to the guru and they said, Swamiji, it is so hot in summer. It is so cold in winter. You must do something. And the guru tells them, go where it is neither hot nor cold.
Mm.
Because it's not an external place. And you know what? Hot and cold, feeling hunger and feeling satiety are both in the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus, the midline of the hypothalamus, the medial part is satiety, and the lateral extremes are appetite. It tells us something about life. Balance lies in the middle, the golden mean.
There it is. The
middle
way.
Connection. Absolutely.
Middle,
because yoga is not, yoga is not about extremism. Yoga is about that moderation. When
yes.
moderation comes into life, yoga comes alive. And this is why it is not the extremes at all. It can never be the extremes, because both the extremes in the yogic scheme pull us away from balance.
Mm-hmm.
Both the like as well as the dislike pull us away from balance. And that is why Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Patanjali, they all say the same thing. We have the raga, dvesha, these opposites which are in the kleshas. And the kleshas, that is the best model of why we human beings have problems. The klesha model is the best model to understand human beings. The raga and the dvesha are constantly pulling us away from our state of balance. And this is where the goal of all the yoga practices, it doesn't matter what tradition, what lineage, whether it is an asana, a pranayama, a mudra, a bandha, a yoga nidra, it doesn't matter what it is, all of them are aiming to induce and educe from within a sense of balance and harmony.
Thank you. And so this balance and harmony, which is also part of the deep ecology movement relative to humans' relationship with the big Mother Earth, and this disharmony that we've fallen into these last several hundred years, there's a very interesting opportunity here now as we begin to wind down a little bit here, this top of the hour. As we expand our curiosity into these practices and we experience in a personal life, right, individual experience, the impact of that, please reflect again, going through your personal history, the tradition that you've come from and honor so beautifully in what you do in your life. And now we face this larger question of how do we blend and integrate so that we don't disintegrate through this grasping, through this consumer, through this gotta have me stuff that's so prevalent. What will be some of the gentle pathways of restoring harmony, both in these lineages, Ananda, just briefly there, but more importantly on the personal development side, so that as we blend seeing and sensing from the individual and the collective simultaneously now, this moving through all of it as one light beam, how might we actually collect awareness in meaningful language so it doesn't feel so hard for people to slow it down and to honor and to live that noble life that you spoke about at the very beginning?
I think one of the plus points that I have
You're stopped.
Hello?
You just froze up. You have to start over.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No issue. First of all, I respect all traditions because I personally believe every tradition is perfect within its own context. It is when we try to take it out of context, we end up with trouble. So this is a disclaimer type of statement I make. But in the tradition that I have inherited from my father and he from his teachers, there is the traditional teaching, yet because my father and I have both been medical doctors trained in modern science, we have tried to express it in a way that the modern mind can understand and connect with in a more harmonious way without diluting or distorting the traditional teaching. So this is often very difficult because when we try to take a traditional system and explain it in a modern context, one needs to understand both worlds. So the advantage for both my father and I has been that we were in yoga before we went into medical science. So we look at medical science through a yogic perspective rather than looking at yoga through a medical scientific perspective. And both are very different. So what we have sort of brought into this is the concept that the practices are all energy based. Mm-hmm. These are not just for the physical body, but we are an energy being. And I like to say that we are basically a big solar panel. That is why we need the sun. And our most important energy reservoir is the navel center. So in most of the practices, we give a lot of importance to the navel center, which in yoga would be called the Manipura Chakra, which is the energy that is considered to be a Samana Vayu. This is the traditional perspective, but this is just as the mother and baby are connected by the physical umbilical cord, we are connected to the universal mother through the solar plexus. So the Manipura is our psychic umbilical cord to the universal mother. And when we are connected, we are healthy. When we get disconnected, we are unhealthy. It is as simple as that. So whenever we are doing the practices are all based on connecting and reconnecting to the source. They are not just to have better pectoral muscles or enhance your gluteal strength or, you know, move this joint. That is all the icing on the cake. That is all the extra popcorn that you get. The main meal is the energy work. And all the practices when we do, they are based on the concept of activation, deactivation. In our tradition, we use a term spanda, ne spanda. Spanda means activation. Ne spanda means deactivation. Which is basically your sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. You don't want to only be in sympathetic. You don't want to only be in parasympathetic. Many times we talk about yoga inducing parasympathetic dominance. That is also not good. It's not dominance of anything. It is autonomic balance we want. We want a balanced autonomic nervous system that if you are in the middle of the road and a truck is rushing towards you, you can jump out of the way. That is what you need to do. Jim Carrey did not do it in Bruce Almighty and got run over by that truck. And so he gets to meet God, and God says the least you could have done is get out of the way. Your sympathetic nervous system needs to be working for that. So the sympathetic is not bad. It keeps you alive. But mm-hmm. the parasympathetic gives you a life. So you need to stay alive, but you need to also have a life. And that is why sympathetic followed by parasympathetic. Activation followed by deactivation. Abhyasa, which is effort, followed by vairagya, which is letting go. And the message of the Bhagavad Gita, do your best, leave the rest. That is where balance occurs. So every concept in yoga, every technique in yoga is primarily aimed at enabling us to be a balanced human being.
Thank you. So last question here as we wind down. And this quality of nourishment that seems to be a big question on the planet now, both for the earth body, our personal bodies, and then these emerging social bodies, these new collectives that are popping up, right? You said the benefit of the Brahmari bee breath practices. Yes. So the question arises from the generative field and how to continue to nourish the generative field as this constraint is lifted on us. And what are these threshold moments speaking to you about, Ananda, as these are the same that we experience in our detailed personal practice? What would you recommend from that mix of personal and collective awareness that now start to dance together, just like the aesthetic traditions in the Indian dance and the music, et cetera, et cetera? The aesthetic of this time.
Yes. I think the key is moderation. For me, moderation is the message we must carry as things open up and as we go into what would be the new normal. So I think a very important aspect is to have moderation and to learn the lessons that we have learned during this time of what we really do not need. I think this has been the biggest lesson for human beings, is to again realize what are our priorities. So I think what we need to do is, it must become a japa, it must become a repeated mantra for us. These are my priorities. I do not need all of that. What I need is this. And I think we should carry this distinction we have. It is a viveka, a discernment between what is need and what is greed. I think we have actually been given a very good schooling in the difference between need and greed, because, example, in 6 weeks, I haven't bought a new pair of clothes. Now that means I do not need to go out every week and buy a new wardrobe. This is a personal lesson we have learned. I have realized for my sustenance and nourishment of food, I do not need all the stuff I used to buy. And it was never much, but that has already come down, because we have all had to cut back to what is essential. And I think we need to keep this message going, because the danger, one of my students in New Zealand, she said, within 3 days, people had eaten more then 3 months in takeaways, the moment it opened up. So the danger is this. It is, see, we take a lesson from the ashram where we do fasting, and our students do 3 days of fasting. Now, it is wonderful. The first day is not too bad. Second day is a little tough. And by the third day, you know, there are things. But then the biggest trick is how to come off the fast. Because there's a tendency on the fourth day to say, I'm going to go to town and order 10 different things and eat them all at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And that is the tough part. So now we are at a point where we need to be even more self-reflective And this is why, if people are in a habit of keeping a diary, please do so and just write it down. Put it in stickers on your refrigerator. Put it on your whiteboard. Write it out in big, bold letters and put it above the door where you go out, so that each time you are reminded that you don't need everything you thought you needed.
Right.
And again, to keep the practice going, I think the tough part will be some of my students, because of this, I said, okay, we'll offer some online programs. And everybody was very happy. And then now some countries have lifted the restriction and people said, oh, I have to go back to work, so I cannot attend it. So what has happened is we have already sort of started to go back to sort of the old habitual patterns. And one has to be careful not to get dragged into it.
Yep.
It is a big danger. So I think keeping one sadhana going, whatever one has evolved as a practice during this time, to help us. And definitely all of us have been developing our own sadhana, which has helped us. How much of that can we carry into what we are creating as a new normal, so that the new normal doesn't reflect that old abnormal which we thought was normal?
Yeah.
And what we thought was normal was abnormal.
So the direction of the energy, right, as I listen into you, is to lift up those kernels of something essential, the real food, let's call it, the real nourishment.
Yes.
And so even if it's just one, two, or three things to remember, is
Absolutely.
What I'm inviting people to focus on before the whole veil is lifted again.
Ooh.
So let's sit with that. And as we finish this last moment, Ananda, is there an image? Is there a teaching? Is there something that we could close with, even very conceptual? It doesn't have to be, you know, smart. Sensing.
For me, you know, whenever they put out a new software, 3.0, and I like to look at this as an opportunity for humanity 2020 to be the best version of itself till date. This is how I envision the present moment and what can happen, that we have been given an opportunity in our hands.
Yes.
Here is a chance for humanity 2020 to be the best version, that in time, history will look back and say, those human beings on the planet in 2020 changed the course of the human history. I hope that will happen. I pray for that to happen. I send out my ichcha, my intent, my sankalpa, that we all contribute. Because each individual makes up the family makes up society makes up humanity makes up the universe. So if each one of us can be that change we want to see, if each of us can keep the transformative principle alive, and if we can realize sharing is caring, and we need to be a good caretaker, a caregiver for ourselves, for other living beings, and for this planet.
And with that, I bow to our shared care for all that lives and all that is arising, and that all the traditions continue to inform us through our practices for the sake of our well-being.
Hari Om Tat Sat. May that be so.
Deeply grateful for your time and energy.
Thank you. And looking forward to seeing what comes out of this. It will be a beautiful baby.
I will be more in touch. Thank you so much. Bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you.